You're listening to the Cultural Hall Podcast with your hosts, Richie T. Stedman and Lauren Johnson. It's a podcast about Mormon stuff.
Nephi! Ella! Samuel! Do you stand it to live righteously?
It's time for another episode of The Cultural Hall, this being episode 15. Our guest today will be Mia Love, and we'll get into that in the second and third blocks. But right now, I want to say thank you so much for listening to The Cultural Hall. I am one of your hosts, Richie T.
And I'm Lauren Johnson.
And you can be in touch with us via our website. Go to theculturalhall.com. There's a Contact Us button there. If you're interested in giving us feedback about the podcast, maybe you're a guest you'd like to be on the show in the future, or someone that you'd like to recommend as a guest, or if you'd like to advertise on this podcast, go ahead and go to contact us at theculturalhall.com. There's also a place that'll lead you there to subscribing to The Cultural Hall on iTunes. Love for you to do that. You can, if you're ever in the Southern Utah area, you can listen to us on Sunday mornings at 11 a.m. on 91.1 FM. That's in Cedar City. It goes as far north as Beaver, if you're interested in that, and somewhere around St. George in the south part. Or you can also just listen to us via the website, theculturalhall.com, wherever you live. And thanks for those people in New Zealand that are listening.
Yeah, thank you, New Zealanders.
We've had a couple of people from New Zealand. As I'm able to kind of see the analytics, they call it, we've got it. We got a fan in New Zealand.
Where else do we have people?
Madagascar. We got a couple of Madagascar. There's a couple in China.
Very cool.
We're very big in Denver right now. We're very hot in Denver.
Thank you, Denverites.
Midvale, Utah. Very, very. And
really?
And
Midvale.
And most recently, Orem. Stepping up to the stage. So thank you, Orem, Utah.
Thank you, Utah County.
And so that's pretty awesome. Again, if you want to sponsor or if you want to just get in touch with us, that's a great way to do it. Also, you can follow us on Twitter at The Cultural Hall or go to Facebook.com and search The Cultural Hall. Join the conversation there. Now, anything exciting going on for you besides that fantastic lady coat you got on?
Well, thank you. I remembered it being cold in here, so I realized I needed to bring a hot chocolate and a coat so I would stop complaining. And I haven't complained once today. Not that we've been recording that long.
No. But, but so far, you haven't recorded.
Right, and I have socks on. So
complained, not once.
Right. I'm taking up my own, I guess, agency, right? Yeah, I own my consequences. And if I don't dress right for the studio, I can't complain.
Yeah. And it wouldn't matter much anyway because there's not anything I can do about it. And if there was, I would tell you that I would do something about it and then not end up doing it.
But you could give me empathy and validation and all those things that I appreciate.
Yeah, I could.
But even though you don't typically give it to me, so I don't know why I even go there.
But I could. I could. Before we get into the articles of news, got a couple emails I want to share. And I know that you had one that you wanted to share as well.
Oh, yes.
So why don't I go ahead and go first? This one is from Roger Brown. Just a quick note to tell you how much I appreciate the podcast, says Roger. I found you guys a couple of weeks ago after a little hubbub on Radio From Hell, which is my day job, where someone accused Richie of standing up on the rammy-umptum, if you will, about the Cultural Hall podcast. I'm a fairly regular listener of Radio From Hell and X96. That's my day job again. Mostly on my commute, and occasionally I'll podcast if there's some interesting interview or subject that I miss. As someone who has subscribed to Audible.com and listened to hundreds of audiobooks, plus the scriptures on tape, CD, and MP3, I really enjoy finding a good podcast to split my time. I've been listening to the Geek Show podcast, which is a podcast that one of my other hosts on my day job does.
Carrie,
and love the geekery that goes on over there. But the language and the outright sexual remarks were really getting me down, and the spirit wasn't too happy with me listening. I'm thrilled to have found and been able to catch up on the Cultural Hall podcast. I'm only now saddened that I am all caught up and have to wait anxiously for the next episode. While most of the episode is purely entertaining, there are moments when I feel the influence of the Holy Ghost nudging me to be a little bit better and reminds me of all that is good in the church, especially when your guests talk about their favorite part of the faith. I also feel a kinship with you, Richie and Lauren, as I served my mission in the Illinois Peoria mission, which included the Nauvoo and Carthage areas.
Oh, wow.
I love church history and cherished being able to see the Nauvoo Temple rebuilt and dedicated. I realize this wasn't such a quick note like I said it would be, but thank you for doing this and making it grow. I look forward to when your podcast turns 19, and then I can judge whether or not it's worthy to serve a mission.
And we'll be asking. Thank you for writing that.
So thanks, Roger Brown. You had one.
I would say, Brother Brown, that that's one of my favorite emails I've ever seen. Thank you. Yes, this was written by a friend of mine in referring to the Mitch Main podcast.
That's episode 13 and 14.
Right. He says, I was touched and enlightened by Mitch Main's thoughts on owning your relationship with the Savior. This struck me powerfully. No one can dictate or control or even fully understand your relationship to God, and you alone have that unique relationship and can choose how you participate in it, whether you are gay, straight, married, divorced, single, old, young, active, inactive, etc., etc., etc. I enjoy your light approach to our Mormon culture, but I was surprised how your guest started me, a straight, middle-aged, rather cynical LDS guy, thinking. This intelligent gay man inspired me, and I felt moved to take some steps to alter my relationship with the Savior. Main taught me something about spiritual yearning and reminded me how powerful the Spirit moves in each of us. This seemed all the more profound for me because he was gay, or is gay. Thank you for this interview. Anonymous. Please withhold my name, he requested.
So that's another great, great email. And again, that was in two parts because it went long. We appreciate Brother Main finally coming and joining us in the Cultural Hall. So that was awesome. Appreciate all of our guests. I know that we mentioned that it seems like we've touted certainly Brother Main's, but you know, Kirby Hayborn, one of my favorite things in episode two with Brother Hayborn is when he talks about, you know, the making of the bread and how he relates that to the Savior, discussing with Jenna Kim Jones in episode three. I don't want to go over all of them, but so many just awesome little bits with each of these guests. So grateful for all of them and look forward to, you know, today we have Mia Love on the show. She's a black woman who is the mayor of Saratoga Springs, a city here in Utah, and she might be running for Congress. Maybe I'll ask her if she's going to run for president of the United States. I haven't decided if I'm going to go that way yet, but she is an amazingly intelligent woman, and I'm sure we have a lot to learn from her. So, you know, as we move forward, all the guests are certainly for our benefit. Got another email. This one is from Aaron.
Okay.
Hi, Richie and Lauren. So, after listening to the episode where Richie gives you, Lauren, crap about being single and offers loads of really useful advice on how to remedy the situation, I thought that I needed to put Richie in his place. However, after listening to episode 12 being when we just visit inside the cultural hall, Lauren, we need to have a chat. She says, here's why. You, Lauren, said something about how when a guy friend of yours gets married, you think it's weird, and you sounded a little indignant and miffed that a guy who is married might actually want to maintain friendships outside of their marriages. Here's why I hate this, Aaron says. Are you assuming that you are some sort of wily temptress that would just make these men forget their wives and totally make out with you over hot chocolate at the Starbucks? She says, I've never seen you, and you're friends with Richie, so I'm sure that you're lovely. Two, she says, are these men not smart and or trustworthy enough to spend time with a single woman who, by the way, their wife likely knows and is already a friend? And three, what is it about Mormon marriages and relationships that makes people think that when they get married or take on a serious relationship, or let's be honest, any relationship, that they have to live like a Mormon monk today, totally celestially pious, and as Bridget Jones said, smug marrieds. Then she says, I love the podcast, guys, and though I've left the fold, so not a member of the church, I'm an Ogden girl with pioneer stock and culturally, yes, indeed, Mormon. Keep rocking.
Okay, well, let's talk about this. Thanks, Aaron, for writing. Well, first off, I'd like to note that I said women do it too, but that I was referring to men because that's what I was familiar with, right? That was my experience. Secondly, I pointed out that I wouldn't be okay with my husband doing this, which means that I don't think I'm a temptress. I think it goes both ways. And then third, Richie and I are obviously still friends even after his marriage, and we dated, so I'm not saying we can't be friends. And maybe I should have gone into exactly what I know. And may I do that right now?
Please.
All right. I do think there are some changes, and you can disagree, and Aaron likely disagrees with me, and that's okay. I do think everyone has to make some changes when they get married with their relationships with opposite sex outside of marriage. I think that goes for everyone. Now, that doesn't mean that you have to live like a monk. That doesn't mean, Richie, that you and I can't host a podcast together, but even our relationship has changed since you've been married, and I think that that's fine. Richie has his rules, if I don't mind bringing a couple up. We weren't going to drive together to St. George for our podcast.
When we did number 9 with Dale Parson.
Which, that has nothing to do with me. It would be anyone with the opposite sex that isn't his wife. Secondly, I'm not going to go over to your home when your wife's there. Or when your wife's not there, excuse me. Only when she's there.
You're making 2 points here, Lauren.
Again, this has nothing to do with me thinking that I'm a temptress. These have to do with my personal values and what I would be okay with once I'm married with a husband. I wouldn't be okay if he was calling his girlfriends all of the time just to chat or inviting them over while I wasn't there. And it's not because I think I'm going to marry some cheating, terrible, horrible man. I just think it's respect you give a spouse. And, you know, Aaron, if you disagree, that's okay. In fact, please write another email about it. But so I guess I wasn't trying to pinpoint men. I wasn't trying to say that how dare men call me once they're married. But I do have an issue when people of the opposite sex try to maintain their you know, opposite sex relationships just as they were before they were married and while they were single. I think there has to be changes. I mean, I don't know if you agree. What do you think, Richie?
They certainly have changed. For me, certainly, I don't know how many times I can certainly say certainly in a 30-second break, but that's four already. I think that that for me, my propensity is to how would I describe this? I think that I often find myself in a poor situation. Let me say this. I never would cheat on my wife ever. I can't really say that with surety, obviously, but I know me well enough to know that there is nothing or no one that would make me go, oh yeah, you, that's going to be a better deal. In that same vein, I am a lot more friendly. I'm a lot more, touchy, those kind of things that, you know, some people would lead to be flirtatious or, you know, maybe inappropriate with me being married than a lot of other people. And so for me, I think, you know, you mentioned things like that we couldn't ride down together. I think that there are plenty of married people who, if they're with someone else that isn't their spouse and they were going to do a work thing, you know, my wife has to travel occasionally with work and she'll travel with just another guy. And that's fine because I know that that's where she's at. But those rules are not rules that she's put, in fact, for me, but things that I've just said, you know what? I know that nothing would happen, but I don't want to have that situation to where something could happen. So I disagree that it has to be the same for everyone. I think that it should be everyone knows who they are, knows where their limitations or their weaknesses or any of those things, and they can dictate it by, you know what, I just think that it's going to be a better situation if we do it this way. Because my wife said, you know, hey, if it's for the podcast and she wants to ride down with you and she's not going to stay with you, yeah, bring her along. And I said, I don't feel comfortable doing that. And so that's why it went down the way that it did. So I don't know. I would agree with Aaron, though. I think that the people that and probably what she's speaking more to is how you addressed it in that episode 12, where you essentially said that the relationship has to immediately change. And for a lot of people there, you know, Aaron in this email actually is a really good friend of mine. And there isn't anything in the world that her and I would ever do.
But would you drive down with Aaron to St. George?
Well, I wouldn't because
it's a choice you've made.
Well,
I'm not saying everyone should make that choice, but that's a personal change that you've made.
Right.
Can I say that?
No, I think you can say that. But there's a lot of people that would think, OK, well, now that she's a girl, I'm a guy and I'm married to someone else, that I can't be friends with her anymore or call to see how she's doing or see what's going on with her. And I think that's more how you came across in that episode
sure.
that she's talking about, that I don't agree with that. And that was one of the hardest things that I had when I first got married is it's like, no, you know what? Aaron, for example, I've known, 5 years and I've only known my wife for, you know, almost three. So it's really hard for me to be like, well, sorry, I'm not going to be your friend anymore because I got married. That's not fair to me and my friendships and those relationships. But it doesn't mean that I'm going to be like, hey, Aaron, how's it going? I want to, you know, go away and fool around with you this weekend. It just means that those are friendships and relationships that I have and that I care a lot about.
Mm-hmm.
My wife and I's relationship being the thing I care the most about. And so if there are any
right.
concessions made with me and other people in relationships that I have with them, it's for the benefit of my wife and I's relationship.
So I would agree with both you and with Aaron that each relationship and marriage is individual. And there are different things that people do. And I'm also not saying that you shouldn't ever communicate with people of the opposite sex once you're married. Obviously, you and I would not be doing this podcast. And
right.
I think that's proof enough that
right.
that's not what I'm saying. But I guess I will stand by, and people will likely disagree, that there are likely changes when someone is very social that everyone will likely make once they get married with their relationships with the opposite sex. That doesn't mean that you cut people off. I just think that some changes should occur with how one another interacts with each other. Mm. And people can disagree with that. And if you do, please, you know, write in. I think that everyone is susceptible to cheat. You make the decision you're never going to. I'll say right now, I will never cheat on my future spouse.
Sure.
But I also think, just like saying I will never sin once you're baptized, everyone's susceptible to sin. Everyone is susceptible to something. So just put some boundaries down where you know you need to. But yes, those boundaries are individual. And I'm not a temptress.
No, she's not.
And I was not applying that.
She is absolutely not a temptress.
See?
Bless her sweet antique shirt and
thank you
leopard coat.
Mm-hmm.
Of temptressity.
Exactly. See?
Temper.
Richie is friends with a lot of ugly people.
Yeah, a lot. First and foremost here in this room. And then I expand
right.
My boundaries. Let's do articles of news. Hit it, Peter.
You can't lose articles of news.
All right. So we don't have a lot of time because we want to get into this interview with Mia Love. And man, what a great discussion. She's an amazing person. I've had a chance to talk to her before. She's awesome. So I don't want to take too much time with the articles of news. But there are a few things that I want to hit on. You've got one story, right?
Mm-hmm, I do.
So let's do three then. We'll do three stories and then just call it. That's articles of news.
Sounds good.
Want to say congratulations and awesome to the folks with Mormon Stories. They had their Circling the Wagons event here in Salt Lake over this last weekend. And had just an amazing turnout. Over 300 people attended the three-day conference for LGBT and same-sex attraction Mormons here in Salt Lake City. It was people from all sides of the fence as to whether or not they agree with it and nature and nurture and, you know, how to deal with it and how to, you know, speak respectfully to everyone. On Sunday evening, the Salt Lake Tribune reported that Speaker Kevin Klusterman, who is an LDS bishop from Illinois, said that the way that gays are treated and perceived by the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints is an atrocity. And that turns out that that's an inaccurate report. So what we've got is an article written by Joanna Brooks, again, someone who will get on the Cultural Hall here in the future. And she goes on to have interviewed Bishop Klusterman about what exactly that he meant by his comments at the Circling the Wagons. But just wanted to say a big congratulations to the people that put that together. And again, a special thanks to John DeLynn for all that he does for this podcast. So that was Circling the Wagons this last week. Look for that in the Articles of News links.
My article, I really enjoyed this. It was on CNN, November 6th. Vice President Biden defends Romney on faith. Vice President Joe Biden said it is outrageous that a portion of the American public feels uncomfortable with presidential candidate Mitt Romney's Mormon faith. Even though he may very well be our opponent, I think it is outrageous. I think it's outrageous that people or the polling data shows that they will not support him, whatever percentage it is, because he's a Latter-day Saint, because he's Mormon, Biden said while speaking at the University of Pittsburgh on Friday. Romney's faith was the center of controversy last month when the evangelical leader and Rick Perry supporter called Mormonism a cult and urged Republicans to vote for a Christian instead of a non-Christian, referring to Romney. But according to the CNN international poll, in October, 80% of respondents said a candidate's Mormonism wouldn't make a difference in their selection process. Still, 17% said they would be less likely to vote for a candidate who is Mormon. On Friday, Biden, a Catholic, argued religion should have no weight in the candidate's qualifications. Speaking on a personal note, the vice president said the election of John F. Kennedy to the White House totally legitimized his family along with other Catholics. I find it preposterous that in 2011 we're debating whether or not a man is qualified or worthy of your vote based on whether or not his religion, being a Latter-day Saint, is a disqualifying provision, Biden said. It is not. It's embarrassing, and we should be ashamed anyone who thinks that way.
Pretty good. That
was pretty cool, especially being that they are his opponent right now. For him to say that.
And very well could be, you know, running right against each other after the primaries. Yeah. I saw that and I was like, yeah, way to go, Biden.
Yeah, I thought it was really cool.
Future brother Biden.
Who's Absolutely. With me? He's a Mormon. Did you hear?
Start that rumor.
He's investigating.
Come on, missionaries. We know where to find him. Let's get there.
He's investigating. Which, can I throw something else really
yes,
quick?
Please.
I know we don't have a lot of time, but There was a comment on a news article that I don't have in front of me about investigator, the term investigator being a cold term when mm-hmm. we refer to people that are investigating the church as investigators. But no one can really find a better term, and someone suggested Mormon curious, yeah. maybe. Anyway, I'd like to throw that out. If anyone can think of a better term than investigator, because some consider it a little bit cold, let us know.
Yeah, I like it. I would say Mo curious. That's where my
Mo curious?
Yeah. Are you Mo curious?
Yeah, yeah.
But other suggestions, please. Yeah. CulturalHall.com or just do it through Facebook. Let's throw it out there.
Yeah, and Biden's investigating right now.
Yeah.
Maybe. Just kidding. He's not.
He very well could be. Actually, I don't know. I haven't looked in his room to see if he has
Decide a Decide for
of
yourself and blog about it.
Yeah. This last one, this is from the Christian Post. So here we go. An evangelical pastor who grew up in a Mormon family and later embraced the biblical Christian faith said traditional Christians should talk real issues with the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints instead of just calling it a cult. It is very clear that there are very significant theological differences between Mormonism and traditional Christianity, acknowledged Ross Anderson, who was raised in California as an active member of the Mormon faith and is now a teaching pastor at Alpine Church in northern Utah. But the word cult, as it is commonly understood, does not rightly describe Mormonism, he told Standard Examiner Friday while talking about his new book, Understanding Your Mormon Neighbor. We're just arguing labels rather than talking about actual issues, said Anderson, director of Utah Advanced Ministries, which plants culturally appropriate churches in Utah and ministers to former Mormons. On whether or not Mormons are Christian, Anderson said, the answer is yes and no, depending upon how you define the word Christian. He argued that the question applies to an individual and not an institution necessarily. Traditional Christians use the word in one sense and Mormons in another, so we talk past each other, he said. Mormons say we live like Christians, so they take an ethical view. Traditional Christians say there are theological differences. He agreed there are certain beliefs that traditional Christians have that are not shared by Mormons. Mormons, for example, do not believe in the Trinity, one God in three persons. Moreover, they believe there are divine books outside of the Bible, including the Book of Mormon, the Doctrine and Covenants, and the Pearl of Great Price. Speaking to the Christian Post, the ex-Mormon had earlier stated that instead of telling Mormons what they believe or should believe, evangelicals should first ask them what they believe. Anderson turned to the evangelical faith after a friend introduced him to literature showing key differences between Mormonism and Christianity. Another former Mormon, Beth Johnston of Idaho, had told the Christian Post that trying to win an argument with the Mormons was not advisable. Too many times I see people spend time trying to tear down the Mormon faith, talking about controversial topics like polygamy, blacks in the priesthood, blood atonement, etc. All of these things are important for sure and may very well lead someone out of the Mormon church, but will it lead them into a relationship with Christ? Anderson said his new book, published by Zondervan, describes Mormon life and culture to people of faith who are not members of the LDS church and helps evangelical Christians engage Mormonism differently than in the past. He said he was sympathetic to Mormons, so it's not an anti-Mormon book at all. Though no longer part of the inner circle, I retain a respect for Mormonism's values and a certain cultural resonance with its people. So pretty interesting that he goes to point out that, hey, you know what, I don't believe them to be a cult, or, you know, what do you define a cult, but that he's still kind of tongue-in-cheek saying, but they're not really Christians the way
right.
that I see them.
Exactly.
And so it's so fascinating. It's an argument that, you know what, I look at it like this. If I believe in Christ, I am a Christian person.
Absolutely.
And that's where it ends for me.
Or I would say even further than that, because I wouldn't consider Jews Christian, but they believe in Christ. They just don't believe he's the Savior.
Right. Okay.
So I would say if you believe Christ is the Savior, boom, then you're a Christian.
Boom, you're a Christian.
I agree.
And then everything else is splitting hairs and fighting wars and yelling matches on porches in Ohio and, you know, anything else that it is just contradictory. So Christian, believe is Christ is your Savior. No?
I would agree.
Who's with me?
Hear, hear.
Perfect.
Sustained.
All right. So we'll be back in the second block of the Cultural Hall with Mayor of Saratoga Springs, a black woman that is just gorgeous, first of all.
Yes, she
intelligent,
is.
Intelligent, second of all.
Yes, she
and
is.
And I think you're really going to enjoy it. It's Mia Love back in the second block of the Cultural Hall.
Sidewinder Media was named as one of Utah's top photographers by In This Week magazine and is a winner of several awards for fine art, portrait, and event photography. Sidewinder Media has been professionally photographing everything from wildlife to headshots for over 10 years. Sidewinder Media has the experience and the knowledge to capture your special occasion or portrait the way you want it. They also film and edit music or product videos and do simple ads for Facebook or websites. Email them at sidewindermedia@gmail.com or call Rusty at 801-941-5576 to book your shoot today.
Hey, it's me, Richie T. Let me just tell you a little bit about Plutonium Home Media. Now, I've used these guys a couple of times, and if you're in the market for getting a home entertainment center, these are the guys to do it. Not only because the reason why the name of their company is Plutonium Home Media is because they're huge fans of Back to the Future, but they do a great job. They'll help you shop for what you want, then they'll come out to your house, they'll install it, they walk you through questions. I'm really technically kind of illiterate. They show me how to use the gadgets. They're awesome. They can be awesome for you. Give them a call at 801-645-1021 and ask for Blake. It's Plutonium Home Media.
Does your Utah business need help navigating the social media landscape? Contact Moz Concepts for help developing Facebook applications, custom websites, and building your social media fan base. Visit Moz Concepts online at mozconcepts.com. That's mozconcepts.com.
Very excited. This is the second block of the Cultural Hall, and excited to have here with us Mia Love. Now, maybe you haven't heard the name before. Maybe you go, Mia Love, I don't know who that person is. Allow me to tell you.
Okay, you go for it.
Me and my friend, Brotherpedia, first name Wiki, would tell you about Mia Love, that she is the first woman of African descent to serve as a city mayor in Utah. She began her term as mayor of Saratoga Springs, my neighboring city to the south, in January of 2010. She was born in New York City and then raised there in New York and in Connecticut. Mia's parents were immigrants from Haiti. She had older siblings who were born in that country. She graduated from the University of Hartford and afterwards worked as an airline flight attendant. Around this time, she joined the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
Oh, no, you go ahead. I didn't know you were going to read that. Continue.
Mia was married in 97, then moved to Saratoga Springs in 2003. She was elected to the Saratoga Springs City Council and in 2009 elected mayor of that city. Welcome to the Cultural Hall, Mia Love.
And might I add, very beautiful and great taste in jewelry.
Oh, thank you.
That necklace going.
It's a basic. Pearls, you just got to have pearls all sorts of sizes.
Lauren's just oogling the pearl necklace. Now, Mia and I, we met a while back, so I know a little bit more about her. She came on through my day job. That's how we first met. And at that point, I said, hey, you know what? Got this podcast that's coming up. Still, it was a vision at that point. Would you be willing to come on? And so thank you so much for being.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me. I'm happy to be here.
So let's start beginning with Mia Love. So you were born in New York?
I was born in New York, yes.
Where in New York? I was born in New York,
I was born in Brooklyn, New York. My parents came over legally from Haiti. You have to say that when have to say that because it's important. They came over and I was born in December 6th of 1975. They became U.S. citizens at that point. And my brother and my sister became U.S. citizens. But I was the only one in my family that was born in the United States.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
And so, so when you say they became at the same time, they like... When you were born, it was like, eh, now she's born, let's go become citizens. Or is it, or does it become that they're citizens once you're born here?
You know what? They always wanted to become citizens. So they got a visa to come over. And at that time in the country, if you had a child that was born in the United States, then you can apply to become a citizen of the United States. I was born December 6, 1975. In January 1st, 1976, that law no longer applied.
Wow. Oh, wow.
Cutting it close, Love family.
Yeah, Bordeaux family.
Yes. Sorry about that. Love isn't a very Haitian name.
There is your name. Mia's a nickname, right? Is that?
Yes. My full name is Lydmia, but I go by Lydmia. Mia. There are way too many people that botch that up. So Mia, it's been Mia for a long time, and that's the way it is.
Okay. I was just wondering how to pronounce it.
No.
Does it mean anything?
No, it doesn't really mean anything. I actually found out when I was 10 years old that it was the name, Lydmia was the name of a father's ex-girlfriend.
Oh, really?
Yes.
One of those.
I never really forgot her, and so, oh, no.
It was too late for my mother to change it.
Oh, that's awesome.
But, you know, I love my name. I think it's great.
It's a beautiful name.
So she didn't know that either? Your mom didn't know?
She didn't know. No, it came up in conversation one day, and I just sat at the kitchen table thinking, awkward.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
Are your parents still in New York City, or where are they?
They're now? In Connecticut. They live in Connecticut. And yes, even after that incident, still very happily married. And
that's good to know.
They got over that ex-girlfriend name.
It's interesting. I bring this up only because I find it fascinating. The whole taking a name and then changing it, because whether or not people are have a hard time pronouncing it or whatever. But President Obama, you know, Barack Obama, in college he went by Barry, and I found that to be completely fascinating. Has nothing to do with the church, and certainly nothing to do with the cultural hall. But all through his Harvard years, Barry Obama.
Yeah,
Barry Obama. That'd be interesting to have a president named Barry.
Barry.
Hey, Barry.
Barry.
So born in New York. How old were you when you guys moved into Connecticut?
I was 5 years old. About five.
And so any family job change? What brought you from New York to Connecticut?
No, you know, my parents thought this was, you know, New York, it's not really nice. Safe place to raise children.
What, Brooklyn isn't safe, really?
They wanted to make sure by the time I went to kindergarten that I was in Connecticut. So they moved to Connecticut, and they brought my sister and my brother over from Haiti at that time.
So they were still there?
They were in Haiti. Mm-hmm.
How old were they?
Oh, gosh. So I was 5, 9, and 7.
My goodness.
Holy cow.
So they, in order to come to the United States, did they need to leave your brother and sister then? And then
they left them periodically. They left them and just to kind of stabilize things and make a life for themselves. And in Haiti, they had a lot of family and, you know, a lot of brothers and sisters that could help so that it wouldn't change their routine until they were stable enough
to bring them over.
So they really did have a dream to come to America.
Oh, yeah. It was a lifelong plan. It certainly was.
And why did they want to come?
Well, they wanted to be able to realize the truth of the American dream. I mean, this country is incredible. We have the greatest nation in the world, where you have all of these freedoms. And in Haiti, you don't have as many of those freedoms, you know, the freedom to choose, the freedom to work, and even to fail. And so they wanted to be able to work and have their children have a great education. And, you know, it's one of the things that people look up to when it comes to the United States.
What do your folks do?
Oh, well, my dad is supposed to be retired, but he's not retired now.
Is he one of those that has a hard time?
He's one of those that just cannot really lay low for a little bit. So he finished his job. When he retired from Brandman Paint. He used to work there. And now he drives bus. Here
really?
And there. Yeah.
Like a school bus?
Cool. It's really low hours, not very many hours, and low-key job. And so he does that because he likes to just work and make money. He just won't sit still. And my mother is a nurse at Wilton Meadows. It's a convalescent home or nursing home in Connecticut.
So Wilton, Mia, Connecticut. You are a convert.
I am.
According to Wikipedia.
Yes.
So it says that you graduated from college, became a flight attendant, and that was around the time you converted. Tell me a little bit about that. How did this happen?
Well, I graduated, and I needed a job that would be able to take me from place to place, and I didn't have to worry about paying for it.
Why did you need to go place to place?
Well, I wanted to be able to leave myself open to interviews anywhere.
Very cool.
And so I became a flight attendant. It's a great thing to do when you're young.
Sure.
You know, take a weekend here or there, you know, so it was great, good for the time. And my sister was a member of the church in college. She became a member of the church during school, and I actually went to investigate. It's a funny story how that happens.
Sure.
Yeah. I went to investigate. You want me to share that?
Yeah, sure.
Okay. So my sister invites me to church, and I'm there as a spy for my parents.
Mia, we need you to go and find out what this whole Mormon
thing
is about.
Yes, what this whole cult is about. Oh. And so I went over, and you have to erase everything you know about the LDS church in terms of the lingo. You have to just erase everything you know. So I walk in, and of course it's Fast Sunday, which is a bad time to bring people
worst.
To church. I mean, I don't know why we don't learn this, but it's not a good time. By the time I was done, I call my mother. I'm just cutting the story short.
No, you don't have to cut it short.
I call my mother and I said, Mom, you've got to get her out of this place. I was sitting down and this woman got up at the podium and started crying, saying she was seeing spirits. and she was feeling them in her, and that's why she was crying. I don't know if she's possessed or what she's doing, but anyway, I walked into a classroom, and Cindy got pulled out. Cindy, my sister, got pulled out because she got a phone call from God saying that she needed to work in a nursery with some of these kids to, like, nurse these kids or something like that. So she's going to be a nurse for the church because God called her and told her. And she's in a room right now with two guys that are putting their hands on her head and they're taking her apart. And that's what I got from that whole thing. And it's so funny. My mom's like, go in there. She was irate at this point. Go in there. Get her out. I said, Mom, she went in there willingly. She went in there like she wanted to go in there. And anyway, I finally got off the phone and I, you know, knocked on the door and they were coming out and she was all in one piece. And
their hands were off the head.
But, you know, you just don't, when we talk about things, you know, when we're members of the church, we talk about things and they're just, we take the words for granted. We just kind of say, yeah, sure. They got a calling and they're being set apart. And I took it from phone call and being taken apart because I've never heard that.
Right.
You know, those phrases before. So I messed everything up that entire day. And so, anyway.
Mom, the phone call later, Mom, I was a little incorrect. She's actually not torn apart.
She went in willingly to get torn
apart.
She's
fine. As a matter of fact, I think I might join this thing.
Yeah. So how did it go? So obviously the first time didn't go that great.
The first impression wasn't great. So I went to a party with a friend of mine. This is months after. I went to a party with a friend of mine, and it's just, I came home saying, I am so sick of this crowd. You know, it's just this party and you go out and you do, it's just like, it just doesn't, it's not me. It doesn't feel good. And I was a member of the Catholic Church by then, at that time. And I grew up a member of the Catholic Church. And I went to church every Sunday listening to a priest speak Latin. And I didn't even understand what they were saying, but I knew, I knew when to kneel and when to stand up and when to do the, you know, the cross sign and when to do all these other things. But it didn't resonate with me. So I started just going with my sister to help support her. And frankly, what really changed my mind is listening to the men talk about their wives. And that was really, that's an impression that they left on me. And I remember a man got up and he said, brothers, you have to love your wife the same way that Jesus loves the church. And I was like, that's a great gig for a woman. I'm like, I want that.
Yeah.
I want a husband that loves me.
Exactly.
The way Jesus Christ loved the church.
Yeah, exactly.
And then I hear these, I saw the way that these men would treat their wives. It's sweetheart and this and that. And, you know, it wasn't perfect, but it's this big, there was a different type of respect that I wanted. And that's what resonated with me. And so I started really investigating.
Had you had relationships up to the point? Up to that point in your life that weren't that way? Like, had you been in relationships with guys where you're like,
oh no,
I really think I could.
I am so standoffish. It was just, I never had time. I never really had a boyfriend for more than 2 weeks. I just didn't have time. I was so busy.
Join the club.
Yeah. Nice try, Lauren. Nice try.
I was just really busy and preoccupied with college and with what I was going to do with my life and didn't really want to settle down or...
But even still, so not having that experience of a poor experience, it was such a resounding thing to be like, wow, they treat their women so fantastic. That's cool.
Yeah, they treat their women so great. And I said, you know, if I'm going to marry someone, I want to marry someone like that.
That's really neat.
So how did that happen then?
Marrying someone?
Yeah. Converting / marrying someone,
I don't want to leave too many open spots. I became a member of the church. I studied and really felt like I wanted to be a member of the church.
And what made you finally decide? Or was there a moment where you said, yes, I want to get baptized? And what created that moment?
Yes, I had two things that were keeping me from being a member of the church. One, and it's coming, you know it's coming, mm-hmm. Polygamy. The polygamy issue, I still struggle with it.
Sure.
Two, the idea that African American or Black men couldn't hold the priesthood till 78.
Those are pretty hefty issues.
Those are pretty hefty issues to have to, you know.
Those were issues?
No. Get over. But, you know, I started thinking to myself, everything else that I understand, I feel good about it. And, you know, we're past 1978 and we're past some of these other things and polygamy no longer exists in the church. And so I took a leap of faith and I became a member of the church because everything else was fine. And it's funny, the day after I became a member of the church, I moved to Houston to start the flight attendant training with Continental. And I walked into a singles ward and there's this old man. And of course, he stood out because it's a singles ward.
Mm-hmm.
old man, black man, sitting in the back. And I went and sat next to him because, I'm just curious. I sat back there and I said, "So, I just became a member of the church. Let me ask you, have you always been a member of the church?" And he said, I don't remember how long he said, but it was a long time.
Huh.
And I said, "How did you feel? How did that make you feel? That, 'cause I struggle." I said, "I have to tell you, it's a big issue for me.
Sure.
I'm Blacks struggling and the priesthood. With the, yes, okay. This is what I tell this man." And I said, "This is a big issue for me. How is it that you were okay with, were you okay with it? How did that make you feel that you couldn't hold the priesthood? Were you worthy to hold?" And he's like, "Well, yeah, of course I was." And, but he said, "But that's not the question." He said, "You know, I've been there and I'm still a member of the church after going through all of that. You were born with all the rights and the privileges as everyone else." And he's like, "We've paved the way." So he said, he's just like, "So you can't, you don't really have the..."
Almost a how dare you be upset?
Not really. It's just, it was just like a, you, it's not really your issue. Mm-hmm. It's not your
issue.
What
are you worried about?
I stayed in. I had that much faith to stay in.
I did it for you.
And so did many, many, many Black Americans. So did many Black people all over the world. They stayed and was part of the church because they believed in something. And he said, "Remember, you know, it's not man's work. It's God's work. And whatever has to happen to get it there is what will happen to get it there." And so I had faith. You should have faith.
Wow.
Was just like, well, I kind of shut up then and just said,
"Did you feel like you were meant to meet him and talk to him?"
You know, everybody says, "I'm meant to do this." They'll stand up and say, "I'm meant to do that." I just think that every experience you have, you take from it what you can. And so, I meant to be here? Yeah, maybe, maybe not. But I'll take the experience that I have here and make it a positive experience. So whether you're meant to be or not meant to be, it's just what you take out of it.
Well, you're meant to be here, Mia. Let me answer that question. You are meant to be here with us doing this right now.
We received a call, actually.
Yeah. And then I tore her apart. And then, I don't know. What about the polygamy issue? Any sort of thing that helped you to get over that? Or was it just like that?
You said that? I guess it's just one of those things that I still, you know, think, ooh, thank goodness I don't have to live through that.
I have a hard time with that, too.
You know, sometimes. It's just, thank goodness I don't have to live through that, because I have a hard time thinking I'd have to share my husband. And I have to tell you, my husband thinks, you know, he's like, "I don't know how those men did it, because I've got a wife that I, you know,
I can bear
about two it. Of you. Yeah.
She's about all I can handle."
Exactly.
So, you know, and so he's just, you know, I'm glad that we don't have to deal with that. And we, you know, men could be committed to one wife.
Yeah.
There's something really special about that relationship.
Absolutely. So when did you meet your husband?
I met my husband about a year after I became a flight attendant. Actually, I met him back up. I met him on his mission. He was on his mission when I saw him.
Oh, naughty, naughty.
No,
naughty.
Yeah. No.
Who's
and
that?
I remember he was actually the teacher of the young man that taught me the lessons and baptized me.
Oh, really?
Yes. He was the one that taught him. So I met him there, and I remember seeing him in a singles ward, and I looked at a friend of mine and I said, "I need to set you up with him when he moves back to Utah," because I had no plans of living in Utah.
Uh-huh.
And so
uh-huh.
I said, you need to meet him. He's kind of cute. And so I remember when I was a flight attendant, that same friend asked me to come and stay with her for a few months while she got things settled and made some friends. So she wasn't out here. She was from Oregon and she was LDS. And so I moved out with her. It was supposed to be for 6 months. And I set her up with Jason.
Who is your husband?
Who is my husband now. I set her up with Jason and it didn't quite work out. He and I were like, we're best friends, and it happened very quickly. It was just very clear that.
How quick?
I would say, let's see. It started in early August, and we were married in December.
Yeah.
Well done. If it's right, it's right.
Yep.
I like that.
Waste time.
Yeah, get it done, right?
And so 13 years later, he's a big, big influence on my life, and it's just, I love being married to him.
And so how old were you when you were married then?
22.
Okay.
So coming back in the third block of the Cultural Hall, we'll talk to Mia about what's going on for her life now, you know, how it is being a mother and being in politics, and I want to talk to you a little bit more about being a member of the church and how it is now, because we talked about the priesthood, but I still, well, we'll get into it here in just a minute on the third block.
Life of the Party Entertainment is more than just a mobile DJ company. DJ Rob has over 8 years of experience in the industry and guarantees to make your party, school or church dance, or wedding a time that you will always remember. DJ Rob gives your event the attention that it deserves at the price that won't crash the party. Visit lifeofthepartyutah.com, and if you mention the Cultural Hall, DJ Rob will give you 10% off, so you can use that 10% elsewhere. Now don't forget, if you want to get your party moving, that's lifeofthepartyutah.com.
Running a small business today can be difficult enough. Imagine all the work you have to do to market it. Imagine the hours you put in to create promotional materials for it. Now, imagine a partner that can help you with all of that and more. Imagine Lennon Design. Lennon Design is your partner in business when you need a professional look at a price you can afford. Whether it's websites, advertising media, promotional materials, and more, Lennon Design can help you promote your business. When you need creative, affordable designs, let it be Lennon Design. Call 801-699-3022 or visit LennonDesign.com.
Third block of the Cultural Hall right now, and still joining with us, Mia Love, future president of the United States of America. Call it. Mark it on this day. I'm calling it out. No,
you know what?
No pressure, Mia.
I would believe it. Also, take note, she is only, you're 35, 36 years old?
I'm 35.
35, what she's accomplished.
She's just barely eligible to even run for the office.
Right, right. And you've been a congresswoman as well as a...
No. She's been a mayor.
Council.
And then city council.
City council.
Yep.
As well as a mayor.
Mm-hmm. So I want to get into it. Teased it right before the break. Sloppily teased it. I want to know how you feel being a black member of the church today.
I don't feel... I don't know. I'm...
I mean, because here's the reason why. For me, I served my mission in Cleveland. So did Lauren.
Mm-hmm.
And and maybe it's just Utah. Maybe that's where my feeling comes from. But I always have this feeling of just an extra sense of pride, mm-hmm, for black people who are in the church. And I don't know what it is. Maybe it's like a reverse kind of racism or something like that. But it's like, I think that's so awesome. And when I go into a ward, and in my ward now there is a black gentleman, and I'm like, yeah, thank you for being here. And
I just
think it's so cool, because here in Utah, we're not very diverse. But I wonder if there's ever any sort of like, okay, Mia, I wonder if there's any sort of standoffishness of people just based on color anymore or any of
that
kind of stuff.
Well, I want to know. Yeah, exactly. And what would you, I think I know exactly what it is, though, that you say. I don't know what it is, why I have pride. I think Mia brought it up in the second block. It's the fact that many people have issues that black men couldn't hold the priesthood until 1978. And it's a struggle, as you talked about.
It's not a struggle for me now. Like
I
said, you know, it was, but it was squashed very quickly. You know, and it's just one of those things. If you think about it, black people weren't the only ones, you know, that it wouldn't have been. They wouldn't have been the only ones. I mean, pioneers struggled being persecuted themselves.
Sure.
You know, and so here's what it's like being a member of the church. I'm no victim. I am no victim. I've never been a victim. In other words, if somebody bumps into me in the grocery store or gives me a dirty look, I don't just assume that they're prejudiced. I assume, okay, that person's a snob or they're having a bad day. I don't single myself out. Therefore, I'm not singled out. I just, you know, and if they do have an issue, if somebody does has an issue with that, it's not my issue.
Sure.
It's their issue. So it's not, I'm no victim. So being a member of the church, when it comes to race, I love being a member of the church. I love that our church has become so diverse. You know, we are Christians who embrace all other Christians.
Mm-hmm.
I've listened to...
Even if they don't do it to us.
Even if they don't do it for... Yes, we embrace and respect all other Christians. And I love being a member of the church, because even if you don't really believe in everything that's in it, which I do, it's still an amazing life. It's an amazing life. You're talking about tithing and fast offerings and giving back and service and being there for your children and being there for your husband and making sure that the family is the core value, is the core of where your base and your foundation is. I don't care what you believe in. Those are great, great principles.
Absolutely. So I have a question then.
Mm-hmm.
when you did have this issue back your first week, you're a new member and you found this man that you were able to go sit next to and say, help me out. It's almost like you're in this man's shoes now where you are. Mm-hmm. What would you say to someone like you, you know, saying, I'm having issues and I need help. What would you say to them? What would you say to Black members and those investigating and people that just have issues now with the priesthood and Blacks not receiving it until 1978?
Okay, so I would take it back and compare it to, for instance, during the time of segregation, where people couldn't walk in or you sit in the back of the bus. So what I do now, I sit in the front of the bus anytime I want to. I sit in the back. I mean, the cool kids sit in the back of the bus. Right. I mean, so that's what you do. And what you would say to them is that there are people that have paved the way. The only thing that you need to do is make it worth it. Make all of the sacrifice worth it.
I love that.
That's what they need to really focus on. So all of the people that have paved the way for us to be, and I'm not just talking about myself, I'm talking about for all Americans, because I think all Americans benefit from everybody having equal opportunity. I think all Americans benefit from that. You have to make it worth it. All of those sacrifices have to be worth it.
I love that. You also said earlier on, you said that I loved the way they treated their women.
Mm-hmm.
There's people today that talk about how only men receive the priesthood and how they think that women are second-class citizens in the church. Maybe it's just anti-Mormon stuff out there, but what is your opinion on that now?
Oh, come on. We all know who moves a family. We all know exactly why they need the priesthood. I mean, they need the priesthood to get them where they need to be. Sorry, Richie. It is just the way
you.
It is. We are the CEO, head of the household when it comes to, you know, my husband doesn't know anything about medical issues or school issues or education issues. He says, talk to my wife, because we're the ones that make the doctor appointments. We're the ones that are in the schools. We're the ones that are in the cities, in the community, shopping in the communities, and we're the ones that are living life. So, I'm sorry, but I think that women are very empowered enough that if we choose to, we stay home and we do these things. But if we feel a greater calling, we can be supported by our community, by our bishops, by our husbands to do more.
I agree with that.
You say a greater calling.
Mm-hmm.
You've got into Saratoga Springs doing mm-hmm. the city council. Now you're the mayor of Saratoga Springs. Is all this a greater calling?
It's a calling. I don't know, you know, greater calling or not greater calling. It's definitely something that I find the fulfillment in serving. I love serving. I always tell my children that you cannot leave. The world doesn't revolve around you. You have to leave a mark. You have to learn to serve others. It's our responsibility to do that.
But why do it this way? I mean, because there are a lot of other ways.
Because there's a need. If there's a need and you can do something about it and change your community, change your state, change your country in a positive direction.
See, President of the United States right there. I just want to
point that out.
Change your country in a positive direction. You have an obligation to do it.
What do you think empowers you specifically? Because as Lauren has pointed out, I mean, that's pretty fast track. City council, now mayor, potentially Congress. I mean,
I didn't grow up saying I want to be a politician. I want to do this. It's just I found an opportunity to serve and I did it. And as I find opportunities to serve and I can make a difference, then I'll do that. The opportunity to serve are the things that just they fall in your lap. And it's whether you're willing to take up that burden and march on with it or wait for somebody else to do it.
Do you believe it's your uniqueness that empowers you? Because I think that that's one of the things for me. I mean, first of all, that you're a woman. I mean, sorry.
Yes,
but,
I am.
But
and don't apologize. But I'm okay with that.
No. But more politicians are men. So you have that, you have that kind of uniqueness. Mm-hmm. But the fact that you're also Republican.
Mm-hmm, I am.
And Black.
Yes.
And Mormon.
Yes.
I mean,
it's like somebody calls it, a friend of mine calls it. She's like, he says, you're a unicorn. Like a unicorn in Utah. Yeah.
That's exactly what Mitch Main said
last week's cultural hall. He's the guy who was called to the bishopric, who's openly gay, called to the bishopric out mm-hmm. in San Francisco. We had him on and visited with him. He calls himself kind of a unicorn,
too. He said, because I was an urban legend. You know, people didn't believe it until they met me that I was openly gay and Mormon.
Wow. Yeah.
Have you heard about that at all?
Yes, I heard
okay.
about
okay.
it.
Okay,
yeah.
I wondered if we
yeah,
were.
Yeah, no.
So I think for me, I mean, besides the fact that you're really intelligent and have never been anything but kind to me, and she was actually getting on my case. I saw her at a restaurant a little while ago, and I didn't go and say hi to her because I wasn't absolutely positive it was her. And she's like, "You should have come said hi. We could have made room for you at the table. Come talk to us," you know. I feel bad. But just such an awesome uniqueness that to me, I'm just like, yeah, I can get behind that.
Well, thank you.
I don't know if that was a question at all. Just
more of a statement.
But yeah, thank you. I mean, I'm me. I have this family. What empowers me? You asked me what empowers me, or what really is it's my family. You know, it's my family. It's teaching my kids things that I would want them to learn.
And taking Richie's statement a little farther, making it a question, do you feel that being a minority in multiple ways, as Richie pointed out, also empowers you?
I don't think so, because I do whatever I can to not single myself out. I do everything I can to not do that. You know, in Utah especially, I have not had any issues with those things in this state. This state has... I mean, I was elected in a council with over 60% of the votes, and then elected again as mayor with about 60% of the votes.
So with that being said, do you feel it is in people's mind when they talk about racism or as you said, people thinking they're a victim? Or what is it then? You just said you were elected to the city council with 60% of the votes. Obviously, that's not an issue then, racism here in Utah. Yet many people will talk about it being an issue.
And again, if you're not a victim, I don't think it's an issue. If you're not a victim, because even if people treat me, I can never go and say, you know, this didn't happen because somebody did this. You have to take personal responsibility for what goes on in your life.
Absolutely.
And if you've got goals in your life, then you have to reach them in spite of what other people think. Again, if they have issues, those are their issues. In Saratoga Springs, I made it very clear what I was going to do, what my plans were, and that, you know, I wanted to make sure that Saratoga Springs was on firm fiscal standing, and that was going to be my goal in bringing economic development. And that was it. So as far as I'm concerned, people didn't care about that, or really wanted that to happen, didn't care about, when I say that, I mean race. They didn't really care about race. And if they did, they cared more about their pockets and what was going on in their community mm-hmm. than anything else. Mm-hmm. Either way, it didn't stop me from accomplishing the things for Saratoga Springs that I wanted to accomplish for the people there. So,
your family is your strength. How?
Well, you know, everything that we do, if it's my family, it means everybody else's family too. Again, living in Saratoga Springs, it's making sure that this community that my children are going to grow up in, and the children around all of Saratoga Springs was going to grow up in, had kept a little bit of the freedoms that we have here. Year after year, we're going up to the state legislators to fight for more local decision making. And year after year, we get more and more taken away from local level. And it's got, you know, those things have to stop. You know, I'm a limited government, small government person, grassroots local decision making person.
I mean, going with it, though, some would say, well, you know, your family, your strength, you're a pretty busy person. Mm-hmm. I mean, you're here with us all mm-hmm. day. Does it ever get hard to be away from your family doing all the things that you do?
It gets hard, but it's worth it. Because when we talk about these things, if we can touch somebody else's life, then the world is better for it. My children get to grow up in a world that's a little bit better. So every moment that I'm away from my children, I do for them and for my husband, and it makes this world a little bit better. They're going to have to inherit what we leave behind.
You mentioned that you feel that America is the greatest country there is.
I do.
You do.
I
We're
do.
Kind of in a time of turmoil, I would say. I mean, I hope that's an okay word to use.
You're right.
Are you optimistic about the future? I mean, what do you, as a politician?
You know, it's not, yes, I'm optimistic, but there are certain things that have got to turn around today. We've got to start turning some things around.
What things are those?
One is the debt. Again, I talk about my children and how they are, you know, the reason why I do a lot of things. I can't stand by as we leave our children a legacy of debt and dependency. They cannot pay for 150% of our lives and 100% of their own lives. That can't happen. It's an impossibility. So that's one thing. We talk about personal responsibility. We've got to be able to let Americans make choices for themselves and be able to realize the truth of the American dream, just like my parents did. You know, when I said the things that made this nation great was the freedoms that we have to choose, the freedoms that we have to work and to prosper, but also freedom to fail. And my parents failed a lot. But they learned from all of those failures, and it got them to where they are today and got us to where we are today.
Paved the path for you.
Yes. And then the last thing is limited government. Again, whether it's state government or federal government, I mean, the regulations, it's just out of control. It's stifling our economic growth, and we've got to be able to allow people to prosper here. We've got, I don't know when it became a bad thing when people made money.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know, you know, Bill Gates, for instance, he equals 100,000 jobs or about that much. We want 20 of them. We don't want to take Bill Gates down. I mean, come on. This is what I'm talking about. These are the people that create jobs and they create places for, you know, people like my parents to work.
Mm-hmm.
So what's the future for you then? You're the mayor right now.
I'm the mayor right now, yes. We've opened up or launched an exploratory committee for the U.S. House.
Doesn't that just kind of mean, hey, I'm going to do it, but I want to make sure no one has a problem with it? That's what I always feel like.
No,
we're weighing out what our options may in fact be. To me, it's just like, I'm going to run. Anybody excited? Anybody want to get on board on this? Yeah.
Well, you know, things are moving in the right direction, but, you know, this is, if I can make a difference, a positive difference in our country, then it's my obligation to do that. And in Washington, you know, you've got 435 members of the U.S. House. That's a place where, shoot, if you can't blend in, you might as well stand out and make some noise. So, you know, if I can do that and get my voice heard by all Americans, not singling one demographic out or one race out, then that's my job to do that.
What is your calling in your ward right now?
I am the Sunday school teacher for the 15, 16-year-olds.
Ah.
How's that?
It is great. I love it. Those kids are just, they're wonderful. I'm inspired by them. And
do they think it's pretty cool you're mayor?
Yeah, I think they do. Or they've gotten over it already.
Yeah. Sister mayor.
They're like, yeah, sister, yeah, whatever. You know,
like that you come in the room, everyone stands up.
Yes, no, no, it's so not like that. As a matter of fact, I'm always like, OK, put your cell phones away, please. Take your headphones out.
Stop
We're going
texting.
To hang out and talk. Stop texting. There's no one there. Your girlfriend's in church.
Yeah.
or she should be.
Yeah. Or she should be.
Yes. And it's funny. We have great conversations. I sit there and I tell the young men, I said, you know, being a member of the church is good for you. All of you girls here, would you date somebody who was just kind of doing their own thing and didn't need, you know, God or Jesus Christ or any principles? They're looking at me like, no. And I said, would your dad have been able to marry your mom? They're like, oh, no, no way. We still don't know how that happened.
Good.
So we have good, frank, open talks. You know, we teach from the lesson and we talk about things. But what's great about that calling, my husband and I teach it together.
Oh, cool.
Who my husband is one of my, he's one of my heroes. He's so great. We teach it together and we let the kids kind of make the lesson their own. So they start talking about things that are pertinent to them and they really get involved. So it's not just a lecture and we can be friendly with them.
Do you talk about the issues that face them today? I mean, drugs, sex. I mean, how do you deal with everything that's going on in teenagers' lives today?
Yeah, we talk about choices. We talk about last lesson, for instance, we talked about what you wanted to do in life and how it's going to affect you positively. And again, how it's going to affect other people positively. And then we talked about all of the things that would get in the way of that, meaning decisions, sexual decisions that may stop them from doing these things, decisions with substance abuse. And it kind of paints a picture that if I really want to do this and it's going to make me happy and it's going to make other people benefit from this, I can't do some of these other things or even come close to doing some of these other things because it really stops what their goals are. And so we talked about those things and they wrote their goals down, how it affects them, how it affects other people. And I told them to put it up somewhere where they can see it every day. So because we're really visual, this generation is becoming more and more visual. So those are the things we talk about.
What is your dream calling? If you could pick, Bishop, here we go. This is what I want to do.
Oh, gosh. Dream calling. I can't tell you. I'm sorry. It sounds very vanilla, but I have found some great things in every calling I've had. I've been the activities chair, and it's been amazing. That was so much fun, mm-hmm. being able to plan all the activities. I really enjoy the callings that I've been able to have with my husband. I think this so far is my favorite, mm-hmm. because very I've cool. been able to hang out with my best friend. And, you know,
how old are your children?
I have a 4-year-old. My husband and I have a 4-year-old, an 8-year-old, and a 12-year-old.
Okay. Very cool. So you're mm-hmm. kind of preparing for them to be that age soon, 15
yeah.
and 16.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey. My husband is just, he's incredibly supportive. He's, you know, he jumps in and fills in the blanks, and we do that for each other.
That's so fun. What do you love most about your faith?
Here's the word. If I can sum it up in one word, it's agency. Again, they're not restrictions, they're guidelines. And the bottom line is choice, the freedom of choice. It's what makes the world go round.
Amen. Can I hear an amen?
Objection.
I sustain.
Yeah, thank you. So now what we ask people to do is we ask them to get up on the Rammy Umptum. Anything that you want, if you want people to follow you on Twitter or find you on Facebook or if you have a book coming out or if you're... You can solicit people.
You're going to run for president of the United States and you want to get a committee together.
We are exploring a congressional run for 2012. And I am on Facebook, Mia Bordeaux Love on Facebook. And I have a mialove.net. If anybody wants to donate or volunteer to help with that exploratory committee effort, that would be great. I would love as much help and support as I can get. And, I'm available and ready to answer questions and talk to people.
When do you have to declare?
You don't have to declare. Well, you have to do it in Utah right before or right after caucuses. So I will make a decision I will be making a decision soon. It'll be fairly soon.
But not today on the cultural, huh?
Not today. No announcements today.
Worth a shot.
One day, Richie.
Yeah, one day. One day we'll people will be like,
I will
yes,
definitely, you will be in my top list of people to call because you've been so great to me. So
well, thank you very much.
Thank you for being here.
You guys are great.
Mia Bordeaux Love, check it out on Facebook. Do you have a Twitter? You didn't mention.
I do. Mia B Love, Twitter.
At Mia B Love.
I'm still going to follow her.
Yeah. And she means literally stalk you. She doesn't mean Twitter.
Just a little bit of both. Well, I mean both. I mean Twitter and
I tweeted that I was here today, so that was fun.
Okay, get the security ready then.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah.
It's for when she walks out. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you. Yes.
And the best of luck to you in the presidential race, but first probably the congressional race. And even further, just the rest of this day.
Thank you.
We hope that this podcast or this episode of the Cultural Hall nourished and strengthened your body.
And that you'll take the things you learned, like agency, into your daily lives.
And that as you travel home, that you will travel home in safety and that no harm or accident will come upon you.
Yes, absolutely. And we'll be saving a seat for you.
On the back row of the Cultural Hall.